very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Wednesday afternoon. We're going to, have you watched The Jams yet on Netflix? It's a new independent television show. Sort of have made a circuitous route to Netflix, and we're going to talk to the guys behind that coming up a little bit later in this half hour. And then in the second half hour, maybe you saw the zany suits that the Cubs were wearing as they headed off to Pittsburgh on Sunday. Many of them were purchased from an outfit called Oppo Suits. It's a Dutch company, and we'll talk to one of the founders of Oppo Suits about how business is booming now that Chris Bryant is wearing one of their suits. But first, we're going to start with The Next Web. Matt Navarro is the director of social media for The Next Web, and we're sort of Eurocentric. It's based in the UK, and that's where Matt joins us today. Matt, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Hey, hi. Thanks for having me.
You bet. How is the weather in Wales this afternoon?
Wales is not too bad. It's approaching 6 o'clock, and it's nice and sunny with a little bit of clouds. It's not too bad at all. Probably not as nice as where you are there.
You know what? I think we're about the same today. Not so nice here either, but let's head to where the weather's usually nicer in Brazil. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about is this is WhatsApp, which is, you know, a hugely popular form of communication on the web, and they seem to be having a lot of trouble in Brazil. It's kind of interesting to me as the world gets ready to head there for the Olympics. What's up with WhatsApp in Brazil?
Yeah, so WhatsApp, we've had a few issues over the last few months in Brazil, and it all stems around privacy and encryption. So there's been a big debate in the US and in many countries around the kind of privacy and security of your data. And Facebook, which owns WhatsApp and many other apps as well, has made it quite clear that they're not prepared to give up any of the data of their users, like Apple, to the authorities when it's required for a legal reason, because they say they don't have the data, or they're not able to get it because of encryption. So because of a court case that's happened recently in Brazil on Monday, a judge issued a banning order on WhatsApp for 72 hours, instructing that all the mobile operators would cease to allow access to all the citizens to WhatsApp, or risk a fine of $145,000. So, yeah, it's been a pretty messy affair.
What's the case about, do you know?
I believe it, and it requires, and I'm not sure specific to the individual case, but I think the police wanted some data from one of the phones of one of the people they were believed to be a suspect in a particular case, and WhatsApp and Facebook said, we don't have that data to give you. The only person that can give you that data is the user, if they so choose, and we're not in a position to, or nor would we want to, give you our user's data. And on that basis, the judge decided to ban WhatsApp for 72 hours, blocking 100 million people who use WhatsApp in Brazil from accessing the app.
That's an interesting thing. I mean, obviously here the FBI and the federal government wanted the access to an iPhone, and there certainly was never talk of shutting down iPhone technology in the U.S., but it's a big world. Let's talk about Twitter as well, because I know that, you know, on my Twitter feed, I also will often get recommendations of other people I should follow. I'm sure there's some algorithm for that, but they're dressing that up a little bit, right, with this Connect function.
Yes, they have. So they've launched this Connect function, which was rolled out or started to be rolled out yesterday. And this is part of a wider range of changes and features that Twitter are desperately trying to get into their app to kind of boost the new users that they bring onto the platform and to keep the users they've got. And essentially, it's a feature within their mobile apps, which gives you much smarter, algorithmically suggested people to follow, people that they think you'll want to follow because you've engaged with similar content or similar people in the past, people that are trending. And I think that their hope is that it will give a much more rich and, you know, useful and relevant experience to users on the platform, like I say, to keep them and to drag new people in. But thus far, for many years, considering they've been going for 6 years and they've made zero profit, taking these constant losses, they're desperate to try anything.
You know, I use Twitter more than any other social media site, and it's maybe that's they're doomed because of that. But, I mean, it's kind of sad because they just keep trying harder and harder, and they can't quite seem to score. All right, I want to talk about, you know, I check out the Next Web often when I'm trying to come up with topics for this story. You manage the social media audience for the Next Web. I think the online community is about 4.5 million people. How is it?
That's right.
How is the community, the online community, different in the UK than it is in the US? Or are there no longer geographical differences? I mean, can you tell the difference from one country to the next?
Yeah, I think you can. I think there are differences, and it's quite subtle, and it's a bit like when you go away on holiday, people's culture, their life experiences, and their kind of a way of reacting and engaging in public and online is different as you travel around.
Sure.
We have a huge audience in the US, and we have a big following in India, in South America, and each of those clusters of communities have different tendencies and different behaviors and certainly different topics that they're interested in. And so it is quite challenging when you've got 4.5 million or more people in different platforms from different countries trying to engage to kind of manage the audience. So, yeah, and in terms of the US audience, I think it does obviously share a lot of similarities with the British audience. There's quite a lot of crossover there. But when we talk about audiences in South America and India, there are distinctly different ways that they kind of respond to content, and we have to kind of react accordingly. So, yeah, it's quite interesting mix.
We talk about globalization and all of that and how the cultures are melding in some ways, but I just wonder if it won't happen via online sites like yours. I mean, if we will start to lose our individual country distinction, not sure that's a good thing, but it might come via the web. Matt Navarra is from thenextweb.com. And listen, Matt, I'm glad you joined us today. Thank you very much for that.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Well, 23, you're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Chris Petlak and Jim Cazera are in the studio. They are the driving force behind the jams.
Ooh, a force.
Yeah, right. What's going on, boys?
Oh, it's great to be here.
So
thanks for having us.
I love the story of this, and I want to talk a little bit about this idea of independent television. So it's a program that I watched the first two episodes. There are three or four?
Four episodes, yep.
I watched the first two last night on Netflix. A lot of fun.
Awesome.
David Pasquese, Catherine,
yes.
Jimmy, you two are in it.
Yeah.
And so, but it's set at a radio station, and you guys started by, tell me this idea of independent television, because it just sort of grew from a kernel of your ideas.
Yeah. So the New York Television Festival, the one line for that festival is that it is the Sundance for TV,
right,
which doesn't really exist.
Right, because the Sundance films find their way to the screens.
Absolutely,
right.
Absolutely.
There's not a lot of independent TV on TV.
Exactly. That doesn't really happen. A lot of independent films can get made. You can find independent investors, and then if they do well at festivals, you get wide distribution, and then there's always like one Oscar nominee per year.
That was the
$5 million movie. But the festival has been trying to really create that space for television, and so this show is the first independent show that they have produced along with The Orchard, and it's the first TV show that The Orchard has produced. So this is the first for everybody in the room.
Yeah.
And Chris, you work at The Mix.
I do,
Street,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jim, do you have a full-time gig too?
I am a substitute teacher and,
nice.
And an actor and a writer.
Okay. And so you met each other doing...
doing improv.
Jokes out in Arlington Heights.
Exactly right, yeah.
Right, and you come up with those. Now, you know, I'd like to give you credit, Chris, for, you know, this creativity of coming up with nutty people that work at radio stations.
Yeah.
But that's sort of like picking corn in July.
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of a big idea for us creating it, is we would hang out and I would tell him all about the goofy stuff that happens at the station. And we realized, like, wow, there's a plethora of characters here, both that you can create and expound upon, and just this world just sort of adds to it.
Yeah. Well, you guys are too young to remember KRP in Cincinnati, but...
We remember. I remember it.
Do you?
Vaguely.
Yeah.
I am too young.
There was also a show called Hello, Larry, with McLean Stevenson, was set in a... That, there's no
that
way
one,
you guys
that
know.
One,
right.
Yep.
News Radio, okay. I remember.
News Radio, right?
Yeah,
News
yeah,
radio.
Yeah.
Okay, so you start with just this idea, you made little 3-minute...
Mm-hmm.
Vimeo, right, that you put up on Vimeo.
Yeah, Vimeo and YouTube, and it was just the two of us in the studio overnight, and just all the goofy shenanigans that these two idiots get into
right
on the air.
Trying to get out of the graveyard shift.
Exactly.
You know,
play Jay and Fitzy, the overnight host.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot like Nick DiGilio here.
Yeah.
That's great.
Nick D.
So when it comes time for the competition, you string these 3-minute videos together into an episode.
Yep.
They like it, and you get a deal, and, you know, it's tempting to say you're off and running.
I mean, that's we're off, and we're not yet running. So through the festival, we saw the Orchard greenlit expanding these into longer episodes, and so but we're still at an independent point in this.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we made these 30-minute episodes, and there's still no guarantee that the world would ever get to see them. And now thankfully, they're on iTunes, they're on Netflix, they're getting traction, and they're making the rounds, which is exciting for us.
So what's the goal? To, I would imagine, to further develop this, not to move on to another show.
Yeah, no, the goal would be to have more seasons, more episodes ordered. So the way that happens is just by people watching it, liking it, and then they come back and go, we like it, let's do more.
Yeah.
So.
Okay,
yeah, yeah.
So Donald Trump woke up this morning as the Republican nominee.
Sure did.
You two woke up this morning with the show on Netflix.
It's true. Arguably, we are having the same day.
Some of us are having a great day, and some of us are him. So.
I wish you great success. It's
Thank
a fun
you.
Show, and it's just a cool story to see how, you know, everything's being developed on its own now, and why not TV?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of the Wild West out there as far as you know. There's a very old Hollywood way of doing things, and it's going away. It's kind of exciting and scary, and it's a good time to not know much because nobody seems to know.
You don't know, you don't know to be afraid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly right.
That's
yeah.
Jim Kazera, Chris Petlak as well. They are the creators of The Jams. Check it out on Netflix. Good luck, you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 12:37 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's right. What's on your plate? Is that tofu I see? Maybe it's from the Phoenix Bean. Jenny Yang is in the studio, and she is the owner of Phoenix Bean Tofu. Jenny, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you.
Turn that mic, bring it right up to your face there a little bit. I'm going to moderate a discussion in Edgewater coming up. It's next week, actually, May 10th, a small business growth panel, and Jenny is going to be one of the panelists. Yes. If you want more information, go to edgewater.org for all of that. So tell me about Phoenix Bean.
Phoenix Bean has been around for a long time, 35 years. We're in Edgewater neighborhood for 35 years. And we are using Illinois-grown soybeans, non-GMO, organically grown, to make organic tofu, traditionally made small batches, and no preservatives, no additives.
You bought the company about 10 years ago?
Yeah, I bought the company 10 years ago. I was the customer 7 years.
Yeah.
And one day the owner knows me, and then he was thinking about retirement. And I liked the product so much, I jump in and I said, I'll buy the company.
Oh, you were in finance, right?
Yes, I was the bank.
So what is someone in finance? Well, I guess you know about running a company and raising the capital.
That's totally different. Totally different. Not only that part, I think I was benefiting. I was, all the skill sets that I learned I had accumulated by working at United Airlines, Air Lease. They all helped.
Right.
Yeah.
But then it comes time to actually manufacture a product.
Yes. Yeah, that's totally operational focused. We have, we used to be 7 people, now we're 17 people. We have some growing pain, but operationally, we focus on traditional small batch. So that was easier for us to transition into it.
Is it tempting to mechanize a little bit more and get away from that small batch?
There's some certain ways. You know, you can make it small batch coming out, how you make the small batches coming out quicker. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of computerized. And so the portion of the water, portion of the beans, portion of the milk come out all the same time.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I think people might be surprised to know that there's a factory making tofu in Edgewater, right?
Yes, yes. We are manufacturing. We wholesale it. Most of people say, what are you doing in there? So recently we actually totally got it, our facility. So actually people coming in, they can see the whole production right in front of them. So some people really like the hot, fresh, hot milk, soy milk. And or tofu or fried tofu, they just want the hot ones. We just come out from our kitchen, give it to them.
And you're expanding, right? Plans for big expansion coming?
Yes, biggest expansion. That for us to moving forward, we really need more facility, cooler, production, pasteurization. We need all the floor plan for facilities.
Things are good.
Yeah, we are good. We are now recognized by so many celebrity chefs, DuckDuckGo, Stephanie, Rick Bayless, and so many chefs are using it. Marimoto.
Sure.
Marimoto says we have the best soy milk for them.
Did you ever go to a celebrity chef who wants to use your product and say, I don't like your recipes enough, you can't have my
Actually, Rick say that. He came to me at the Food Festival, Good Food Festival the other, last year. And he said, Jenny, hi. And I know we know each other for a while. And then he said, hi, I don't like your tofu. I was like, freeze there. I don't know what to do. And then he suddenly says, I love your tofu.
Oh, nice.
So everybody started laughing. That was relief.
Also available at Whole Foods and Mariano's,
yes,
right?
Yes, we are.
And, all right, so let's talk a little bit about how you... Because what I read from you is that when you bought the company, you recognized the U.S. as really a great market for growth.
Yes.
One of the reasons it's so ripe for growth is because so few people are willing to try tofu.
Yes.
And so how do you make them / yes. us try your product?
I think the key point is people never try fresh tofu. Mm-hmm. Just like fresh mozzarella, you know, variety of olive oil, variety of vinegars. We are artisanal. So when you come to that stage, we just basically reintroduce fresh tofu to Chicagoland area. And people, whoever tried it, they loved it. You know, we had a focus group. Sorry to put you into a demographic.
That's okay.
The Midwest white male is our target group. We see,
I am one of those, Jenny.
Can we go into, you know, their regular diet? Because basically we're the third white meat, right? We are protein,
sure.
plant-based protein. And we have so many flavors right in front of you. We have four flavors today already.
I'm going to have them for lunch a little bit later.
Yes, yes. We have different texture, extra firm. We pre-press the water already. We have marinated five spice for you. We have tofu noodles for you. So basically, people are just not aware of that. So we just reintroduce our product.
So you would bring it out to farmers markets and things like that?
Yes, yes. We 4 years ago, I think 5 years ago, we started trying it out in Andersonville Farmers Market. It was just, you know, mixed feeling.
Sure.
Not sure. People says, where's your soybean from? We use only Illinois non-GMO organic grown soybean. We work with three farmers to provide soybeans. The first question they ask is the soybeans from China?
Right.
And so no, we soybeans in Illinois is abundant, it's beautiful, it tastes so good. So we just use working with good farmers to grow for us.
So Phoenix bean tofu is an all Illinois product.
Yes, 100%.
Now here's one thing I didn't know, because in reading about your company and just the things you said, you know, again, it's ignorance. It is ignorance.
I'm just not aware of it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and on my part it is, and reluctance or whatever, but I kind of thought tofu was tofu. And
yes.
You talk about all the different varieties. And so tell me about how you shake the – tell me about the different varieties and how you make them. Is it like wine in a way?
It's cheese in a way.
Like cheese in a way, okay.
Because you use the beans, soak it, grind it. You can do it at home. And then you can curd them and then press the substance, the water out, and then save the substance is just basically like tofu.
So what makes one tofu taste differently from the other? Is it the milk?
Because of milk, and the white milk is different because we use so many soybeans, and we use the best soybeans here.
Yeah, Jenny Yang is here. She's the owner of Phoenix Bean, and we're going to talk more with Jenny at the Small Business Growth Panel in Edgewater. It's at Loyola University next Tuesday. You can learn more about it at edgewater.org. And one of the things I want to talk to you about as well is this idea of going from someone in business to someone running a business and running you know, involved with people. I read that one of the biggest lessons you had to learn was how to delegate in some ways, right?
Yes, yes.
Tell me about was there a big culture clash going from finance to manufacturing in the north side of Chicago? And also, I would imagine there's some emotion in it because it was a product that you loved before you bought it.
I'm totally a believer. That's the number one key point. If you don't believe your own product, how can you sell it? How
right.
can you attract people, build the talent around it? So I think that's number one. I think I went to Kellogg, Northwestern.
Uh-huh.
The Kellogg focus is, you know, marketing is important. You know your customer. What do they want? And I was working with field from the first-hand information from the field when I was doing farmer's market. I know what they want. They know tofu. They have never tried tofu, though. They don't know how to prepare tofu.
Uh-huh.
So we solve the problem for the people. We have the tofu we made for you to the texture you wanted, and easy to grill, easy to put all the American applications. So we solve the problem for them.
So you made tofu a little bit more American.
American way of using it.
American way of using
well,
it.
You're using traditional way of making it, so the texture is coming out all different ways.
I got you.
We work originally with a lot of Asian chefs. They are very critical. They have 30 seconds to make the dish. So if your tofu go into the wok or, you know, fire or grill, it falls apart. It doesn't work. So they don't have patience. If you don't sustain their grill, their question, their challenge, they are not successful. We are not successful.
That's Jenny Yang from the Phoenix Bean. How do people find out more information about your company?
www.phoenixbean.com.
Sweet. Well, it's nice to talk to you. I look forward to seeing you next week as well.
Yes, look forward to.
You're listening to the business, and I look forward to my lunch of tofu, too.
Yes, that's right.
The business lunch on 720. Okay. She doesn't believe me. WGN. Crazy about it. 12:52, you're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, if you live in Chicago, especially if you're a Cubs fan, you probably saw the Cubs. You know, Joe Maddon, the manager, has these sort of interesting, innovative ideas about team building, and one of them is to dress in a funny, silly, or unique way. And in this weekend was their first trip for that. When the Cubs left Wrigley Field to head to Pittsburgh, they were wearing wacky suits on order. And a lot of those suits came from Oppo Suits, which is a Dutch company. Jasper Kastelein is the creative director for that company, and he joins us on a phone line now. Jasper, welcome to Chicago and the Business Lunch.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How is everything in the Netherlands today?
It's very good. It's actually very sunny, so that's we've been waiting for the sun for a while, but it came through today, so yeah, we're excited about the weather.
You know, it's nice to talk to you. I have to tell you, the best man at my wedding was from Rotterdam, so
okay.
I love the accent. It's good. Rob has lost most of his accent, so it's nice to hear yours today.
well, I'm doing my best to cover it. But,
I'm sure your friends don't call you Jasper. How do they pronounce your first name?
It's just Jasper.
Jasper, okay. Well, tell me about Oppo suits, exactly. Because, you know, we've seen pictures of them, and I know the Pac-Man suit is the big one, but all of these loud, bright suits that you guys are selling for only $99. Explain that for me.
Yeah, that's correct. We have a line of wild and funny looking suits. They're all good quality, nice fitting, and under $100. We came up with this idea 4 years ago while we were traveling in Vietnam, and we had a couple of ridiculous suits made, and we got so many good reactions from friends and people we were traveling with that we were thinking, why isn't this a thing yet? And that's how we came up with it. And so we just we gave it a try, and we ordered some suits, and they became really popular in Amsterdam, and then in the rest of the Netherlands, and then it started to grow in Europe. And I think it was in 2014 when we started to sell our suits in the U.S. It's growing ever since, and it's going really, really well.
So you were in Vietnam where you saw that someone was making these suits?
Well, they weren't actually making funny suits, but just regular suits. Vietnam has got like a pretty well-known tailoring industry. We were just, walking on one of those local markets, and we saw all these, fabrics, and we were like, why? It would be funny to have a suit, but then in not like a regular, like a boring blue or a gray pattern. So we just had a couple of suits made in like a tiger print and a flower print, and people were all over it from the start.
And now you're going to do $10 million in business this year?
Well, we certainly hope so, yeah. We're aiming for that.
So you pretty much paid for your vacation then to Korea or to Vietnam.
Yeah, well, actually, that was a lot cheaper. So, business is good, especially with, with our business growing in the U.S. We just recently opened a office in New York City because, back in Europe, for example, like baseball isn't really a big thing, so we have to, watch social media and watch Instagram and Twitter and that kind of stuff to see what's going on. And that's when we decided, okay, this is such a big thing, but we don't know very much about it, so we need some local people in the U.S. to, keep us informed about what's going on and everything.
So did you, Jasper, did you approach the Cubs or did they approach you?
They just bought the suits themselves.
Okay.
So,
you weren't even aware of what was going on.
We saw it on social media, and we'd be happy to help them out for the next trip. Of course.
I bet you would. You seen a spike in business since the Cubs did this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's always with these kind of things when. We've had a couple of other celebrities also wearing our suits, and You know, many people still don't know our name, and it's obviously very logical since we're great. But if you look for crazy suits or funky suits or you know, like a flower suit, you'll if you look for that on the internet, you'll find us automatically. So yeah, that's obviously people saw those photos. They were Googling probably tulip suit or stars and stripes suit, and they found our website. And yeah, there's a big spike in the business the last couple of days.
Well, your name is Oppo Suits, and it's fun to talk to you, Jasper Kastelein. Thank you very much, and come to Chicago. We'll go to Wrigley Field, and I've got a translator who can sit between us and help us talk to each other. Not that you need a translator. You don't need a translator. I need a translator.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Continued success. Absolutely. Bye-bye. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.